Welcome to Abound in Hope, a podcast from Imprint Church. Our goal is to help you apply the hope of the gospel of Jesus Christ to everyday life.
Welcome back to Abound in Hope. I'm Rex Gorman. I'm sitting here with...
I'm Darren Larson. You had a great, like, inflection. Inflection, is that the right word?
Inflection. You had a great inflection.
You're like, I'm Rex Gorman.
I'm Rex Gorman.
I'm Darren Larson.
I'm Stephen Mendez.
And Stephen Mendez got promoted very quickly, because last week he was but a humble guest on our show.
No,
he was
special.
He was a very special ghost guest. He's a very special ghost. I can't talk today. I said my last name is Garmin, and he's a ghost. He was a very special guest, and now he's a humble host.
We have promoted you already.
I know.
It's amazing.
Making waves.
Glad to have you here.
Yeah. But we last week we had the privilege of interviewing Stephen and kind of hearing his story and you know what it looked like for him to kind of know Jesus and come into ministry. This week we thought we'd do the same thing. This is reminiscent of a series we did at the beginning of the year called The Word of Their Testimony. Darren, what is that about? What's that from?
Yeah, we had the privilege of hearing from several people within the context of our congregation and just shared their story of how Jesus has saved them and how they've walked with Christ in their lives in ups and downs, suffering, pain, sin, all the things, which is really cool. And it comes from Revelation 12, where the Bible tells us that believers will overcome the evil one by the blood of the Lamb, the word of their testimony, and not loving their lives unto death. And so these are the stories that we hear of people, how they got saved by Christ, what he's done for them on the cross, and they're what, as they speak out what God has done for them, it's their way of overcoming the evil one in their lives.
It is. And honestly, it's sort of a way of building gospel culture. That's something we harped on a lot last year very explicitly, but this has been sort of subversively gospel culture. I mean, hearing struggles, hearing stories, it's a way of walking in the light together and getting to know each other more. And that just adds to that shared experience of God's grace for the undeserving.
There's something about the humility and the grace that we have with one another in sharing our weaknesses and sharing our struggles and just the vulnerability that comes with that.
Yeah. And that's happened. I mean, it's not been all rosy. No. The stories we've heard here, it's been cool. But to that end, we have a very special guest with us today. Very special guest. Who are you?
Hello. My name is Kyung. I've been at Imprint about 2 months now.
I know, yeah. Woo-hoo. Kyung is here as our pastoral intern, and it's been fun. If you've been looking around on Sunday morning at someone kind of running around very energetically and doing all sorts of various things. Praying with the welcome team, moving coffee around, all that kind of stuff, then Kyung is the man. Kyung, you've been here, what, 2-3 months, you said?
About 2 months,
About 2 months now. Yeah, and you're going to be with us, I guess, for a while.
Forever.
That's the goal.
Got him.
But you'll see Kyung doing all sorts of stuff, won't we, Darren? We'll kind of see him all over the place.
And... Yeah, part of our goal with this was, actually, can I tell the story a little bit, Kyung? Is that all right? So, a while back, we were looking to bring in someone to lead our family ministries, and Kyung had a great story because he was involved in ministry, and he was trying to figure out whether God wanted him to be called to vocational ministry. He was a missionary. I won't give away your whole story, but he was in missions, and he'd heard about it through a friend of his who I'd interviewed for the role, and the friend said, I'm not interested in the job, or it doesn't really fit me, but I've got a guy you should talk to, and that was Kyung. And so Kyung and I met, you were in Korea at the time.
Mm-hmm. We met through Zoom,
and we chatted.
Met through Zoom for a while,
true, so but this was post-COVID. But we chatted a little bit, and I was like, man, I really like Kyung. I really like his heart for the Lord, his heart for ministry. He's in Western Seminary, going to seminary, and we're like, all this stuff made total sense. But as we began to talk about it, it was also like this sense of like you trying to figure out by the Lord, like, what does the Lord want for you for the future for ministry? And so that'll probably be part of your story right now. But we'd realized, man, maybe the role that we looked for and first talked to you about wasn't the right role for you at the right time. But we actually just really liked you. And we're like, dude, we believe in this guy. And so we went to the elders and kind of just said, can we like have a pastoral intern role around here? That would be something that would kind of give him a chance to do all kinds of things. So start off with hospitality, do some student ministries. We've talked about some worship stuff.
Yeah.
We even had him up a couple weeks ago doing hosting. So give him a chance to be in front of people. So yeah, Kyung is in like this role of like, man, what does the Lord have for him?
And yeah.
So we're grateful that you're with us on the team. So you serve on our team now, man, is what you do.
It's fun. It's fun having you around, man. Well, hey, let's kind of rewind a little bit.
Yeah, sorry.
Where are you from originally?
I was born in Korea. And when I was 6 years old, I moved to Washington. So from 20, oh, whoa, 20. Yeah, I've been here like 20-ish years, or, oh, whoa. So from 6 years old to 26.
Math. Well, you just turned 30, right?
Yeah, and I just turned 30 last week.
Ooh, cool. That's old.
It is old. Yeah, real old.
Yep. Yeah, so like 24 years you've been here. What brought you your family over here?
Yeah.
Should I just start from the beginning?
Yeah, tell us, very beginning.
Wow. So how I got to America, I guess. Well, first, when I was in Korea, it was with my mom, two older sisters, and I. And at that time, my father was actually working in Alaska. He had a job in Alaska, and he'd come over twice a year just to, you know, see the family. But unfortunately, a few months after I was born, my father got into a car accident in Alaska, and so he passed away. Mm. And so for me, I don't really remember this, but this is what my mom tells me. She told me that I kept asking her, you know, when's dad coming home? I want to see dad. And because I was, you know, only a few years old, she didn't have the heart to tell me. So she kept saying, you know, dad is working. Mm-hmm. He'll come home soon. You know, just wait a little bit longer. And so eventually, that's how my mom, found my stepfather. And so when she introduced my stepfather to me, she actually introduced him as my biological father. So mm-hmm. I thought he was mm-hmm. my real father. And he was from Tacoma, Washington. And mm-hmm. so that's how, when I was 6 years old, our whole family kind of came to Washington.
Got it. Man. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's crazy. When did you find out everything that happened with your dad? When did that come to light?
Mm. Man, there's a lot of things that happened. But I think as I grew up, I started noticing pictures of my biological father. And he looked completely different than my stepfather, because my stepfather, he's mixed. So he had an Asian face feature, mm-hmm. but like dark skin and an afro. And I'm like, I don't know if Koreans have afros.
And you're like, I don't have one either. So what's going on?
You're like, what's going on here? Yeah.
So I think like middle school, high school, I started to like question it. Because again, my mom never told me during that time. And so I just had this feeling, oh man, you know, I don't think he's my actual father. And eventually, as I went to college, then my mom had that talk with me. This is well after he actually, I don't know where he is, because we ended up separating from him. Mm-hmm. So this is well after that. And yeah, she just told me as I got into college, hey, you know, that actually, you know, was your stepfather. Your real father passed away. And it was kind of like, I kind of figured it out. Yeah, but it was still good to hear it from her.
Yeah, it was closure. Mm-hmm. It was a real thing. Man, that's a crazy story.
When you were when you came to the U.S., did your family go to church when you were here? Were you guys part of a church or anything like that? Or what was religious life for mm-hmm. your family like when you were young?
So we went to, when we first came, Tacoma First Baptist Church. That's the church we went to. But I would say, well, my mom, when she first had me, she was actually a very new Christian, and she actually prayed. Because Asian grandparents give a lot of pressure to have a boy. Mm-hmm. And so by the time she was pregnant with me, she was, Lord, please make this next next child a boy, mm-hmm. and I'll make sure he goes to church. And then so that's why after I was born, even if she didn't go to church on a Sunday, she would send me to church. And so I grew up going to church. My mom would always send me. In Washington, we would, you know, always go to church on Sundays. But again, it wasn't, I didn't really get much of it because I was so young.
Yeah, yeah. Were your older sisters and stuff here as well? Were they part mm-hmm. of that as well?
Okay. Yes.
Yeah, very gotcha. Cool. What was it like to come over to America from Korea? What was it like being kind of an immigrant family? Like, mm-hmm. what is that like? What is it like to grow up in a city like Tacoma when you come from Korea?
Yeah, at first, it was exciting. Yeah. It was exciting, but I think the hard part for me was because our family had a lot of struggles. So my stepfather ended up being very abusive. Mm. And so that led to a lot more problems just, you know, with me in terms of my relationship, not just with my stepfather, but that kind of carried over to my mom and my sisters. Mm. And so even though it was exciting at first, it was really hard for me because, again, I was 6 years old and I just didn't feel I just didn't feel great with the whole situation.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. I had a question and then it evaporated.
Oh, that's okay.
No, I'll keep going. Darren and I usually start asking a question at the same time and then we both chicken each other.
Well, I always like, I'm trying to like defer to someone else because I feel like I might like rule the conversation if not.
So you're 6 years old. You've just moved to America and you're in church. You're not getting much out of it. When does that change? When does grace, when does Jesus enter the picture?
So, you know, there's a lot of, so from now 6 years old all the way to 12 years old, there's so many memories because, so that's how long I was, our family was with my stepfather. And so, I mean, during those 6 years, there was a lot of hardship. And one of the memories that I remember the most, again, is, you know, at one point he was, you know, on top of my mom and he was choking her. And I was like 7 years old at that time. And it's just that memory just it's so ingrained in my mind that I, you know, before I met my stepfather, which I thought was my real father, you know, I was longing to see my dad. I really wanted a father figure in my life. And now that I had him, and he turned out to be very abusive, especially to my mom and my sisters and me, I didn't want a dad anymore. You know, as if this is what a father is, if this is what a father figure
then I want no part of that. Yeah, yeah.
I just want him gone from my life. And so by the time I got to seventh grade then, you know, this continued throughout the years. And eventually one day, you know, my mom came home and she had cracked ribs. And so that at that point, we, you know, my sisters and my mom said that was enough. We called the police, got a restraining order, was able to separate from him in that sense. And for me at that point, I was honestly... At that point, I was overjoyed because I was like, yes, he's, you know, finally leaving my life. He's not going to be here anymore. But after a few days, you know, that joy quickly went away. And I was, there's a hole in my heart that was just bigger than ever. Totally. I just felt worse. But the week after he left, you know, now I'm in seventh grade. It was during the summer, so I could go on my first youth retreat. And so... After that week, I went. You know, we went to a youth retreat, and you know, the first few days were normal, just have fun. But it's always the last day.
They crank up the emotion. Yeah.
Emotion then.
They wear you out like crazy, and then
this one goes up to 11 tonight.
But that the last night, and it was just what I observed that really piqued my interest, and what I observed were, you know, I would see people praying, and they were praying. And, you know, when you're praying, you know, sometimes you get emotional and you start crying. Mm-hmm. So I would see people crying as they're praying, but I could tell they were actually very happy inside. It was a weird emotion that I kind of wanted in my life. You know, all the times that I was sad, that I was crying, I wanted to be happy. And so because of that, I asked my youth leader more about, you know, what is happening? You know, how come they're crying but happy? He just told me, that's when he kind of told me, you know, it's because, you know, they have a relationship with Jesus, they have a relationship with God, and, you know, Jesus brings hope. And so that's when it all kind of clicked, all the Sunday school stories that I heard. It just like, oh, so these are real, you know, God is real, I can have a relationship. And so that's when I was really interested. And so then the week after, my youth leader, then after one of the Friday night, you know, Bible studies, we just started praying. And then all I prayed was, because, I didn't really know how to pray. But he just said, if you don't know what to pray, just thank you, Jesus. Thank you, Jesus. Just say that over and over again. So that's all I did for like 40 minutes. Thank you, Jesus. And then I was falling asleep.
Nothing's happening.
And I was like, oh. But it was just one of those things like, oh, wow, how do you, you know, I was in seventh grade, you know, how do you pray for 40 minutes? It's like my attention span was like 5 minutes. But it was just that for some reason, I just kept with it. I just kept praying because I was, you know, I just felt compelled to keep praying. And all of a sudden, you know, as I'm falling asleep, as I'm saying thank you, Jesus, and trying my best to like picture Jesus, you know, dying on the cross, even though I don't know what that meant, you know, it's like, okay. All of a sudden I felt this warmth wrap around me from the back, like someone was hugging me. And the words that I felt were, you know, Kyung, you are my son and I'm your father. And it's just at that moment, I would say I felt God's love. At that moment, it's the Father's love that I was always looking for in my life. Mm-hmm. It's the kind of love that I was always seeking since I was young. And so, you know, the pain from, you know, my stepfather, it didn't go away, but it was just so minuscule compared to God's love that I was just overwhelmed. And I think it was at that point I really decided, you know, I want to grow this. If you know, this is what it means then to have a relationship with God, then I want it. You know, I want to know more about Jesus. And I think that's how my, you know, journey really started.
That's an amazing story. That's like a supernatural story of God, like reaching out to you in a traumatic growing up years that you had with your stepfather. That's pretty amazing. Yeah. Did your life change at that point too in junior high and high school, you think?
Yeah, I mean, I was definitely, you know, I was definitely on like a spiritual high at that point. I was like, man, I just want to spread the gospel everywhere, share, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. But I think one thing that God was really calling on my heart during those times was then forgiveness, okay? Now it's like, now I got to forgive your stepfather. Mm-hmm. But which is like, man, I don't know. Like, I had a lot of trauma, a lot of bad memories.
Yeah.
But this whole process took eventually 7 years. So I think during this time, as I'm learning to, you know, be a disciple, what it means to be a Christian, as I'm slowly taking that all on, you know, after 7 years, I think I was finally able to forgive my stepfather. And, you know, I can say with confidence, I hold no grudges now. You know, even though, yeah, a lot of things he did, you know, it were questionable. He still provided for my family. You know, he still raised us. He still, you know, helped out the house. And, you know, I just have, in a sense, more love for him. And so again, it didn't happen right away. It was more of like a 7-year journey into that forgiveness. And so I think through that, God really then also opened up my heart for other people.
Yeah.
What did that journey look like for 7 years of trying to, you have this new picture of father when you had maybe a poor picture of father before. What did that journey look like? How did, how'd you get to that point where you could actually forgive him?
Yeah, definitely the first few years I didn't even think about it. Like I try to block it out.
Yeah,
you know, I was like, I don't want to think about my, you know, that's the past.
Let's go back to the spiritual high thing. Yeah, let's do that. Yeah.
Definitely. It's like, why do I want to come back to thinking about, you know, the bad things in my life, the bad thoughts? I kind of just want to block it off. But then as, you know, years went by, as I went from middle to high school, I just never found peace. You know, it just always came back. And I just kept feeling, you know, I have to get to a point where I can forgive. And you know, when you hear, you know, you read the Bible and Jesus forgiving, oh, forgive 77 times. I'm just like, I don't know. But yeah, and especially during this time, because again, I thought he was my real father. My mom, again, never confirmed that he was my stepfather.
Not until college.
And so this journey, I would say it really tested a lot of just, you know, do I really believe in Jesus? And do I really believe that he's forgiven me of my sins? Mm-hmm. And then I think once I got to a point where I was like, I believe it with all my heart, then I was more able to like, okay, now let's forgive my dad because Jesus forgave me.
Did anyone help you along in that process? Because I feel like, you know, I don't know. I think sometimes there's that quote by Bonhoeffer that we've used a lot where it's like the Christ in your brother is stronger than the Christ in you. And like sometimes that's encouragement and sometimes that's like, hey, no, like this is actually the way you need to go, even though it's really hard. Was there anybody that kind of helped you understand forgiveness in that way?
Yeah, I think there's two moments. Once in middle school and eighth grade, again, these are stuff like family problems that I didn't want to share with anyone. So I always kept a secret. I always kept it to myself, even with really close friends. You know, I never shared about my family. Like my friends did not know anything about my family except that I had two older sisters. And I briefly, with the youth leader that prayed with me that one night, you know, I just broke down crying one night, saying, You know, I just didn't feel good inside. And I just kind of released all my emotions, my thought process with my father. Mm. And so he kind of helped me there in terms of helping me to then, you know, no, you have to be more aware of your emotions and be willing to talk about it. But I kind of, again, kept it hidden for like 3-4 more years. Mm-hmm. And then once I got to be a junior and senior in high school, I was at another youth retreat.
Yeah.
Last night.
Yeah, that last night, man. It's an arc. They know what they're doing. Steven's going to have a podcast coming down the pipeline about that.
It was Steven's planning his youth retreats right now. So.
He is.
Watch out, kids. Night. Saturday night.
Yeah. Only the last night. The last night, we got to like go off into our own small groups. So it was just... And I was at a different church at this time. So it was... me, you know, my closest, it was like the senior boys or junior or senior boys. I forgot what grade I was in. And it was with the leader of our time. And, you know, just one by one, we just went around kind of sharing what was on our hearts, kind of opening up. And I had no plans to share anything about my life, my father. But like after seeing, you know, first my leader share about sensitive things in his life, and then like 3 or 4 of my close friends sharing things in their life, I just felt like I also had to get it out there. And so I shared everything with them. And it was I think it's at that point then, you know, because my friends knew what was going on with my emotions, because my then youth group leader knew what was going on after I shared, they were more willing to then help me through that whole process. I think that's really important, that I got it out there. And then now that I had people within the church, a church community, to kind of build me, help me through all those emotions.
Yeah. So that was a big step for you then, mm-hmm. not just in like, you know, dealing with your own thing, but in mm-hmm. probably an understanding like this isn't just something I do by myself. Mm-hmm. Like this, there's community that mm-hmm. I have to invite in here.
Yeah.
That's a hard lesson to learn. Mm-hmm. That's something I think people still learn.
Once again, it goes back to kind of radical transparency and honesty mm-hmm. that you know, probably is what brings healing to our lives mm-hmm. in so many ways. Do you remember how your friends responded at that point? Did they respond in care and love and things like that? Or did they, what was the vibe like mm-hmm. at that point?
I mean, that last night, it was very emotional.
Sure.
Because, I think because everyone shares such sensitive topics in their lives, it was very quiet. But at the end, you know, we did gather around for a big hug. And it really did feel like there was a big church community that I could go to, that I could lean on.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's over. Yeah.
And that was probably a burden you were carrying, right? Mm-hmm. For years. Like the sense of like, did I forgive my father? Can I forgive my father? Like, how do I do that? Like, mm-hmm. What does it feel like? And what does it look like to forgive mm-hmm. someone like that? And you started to feel it come off at that point, I imagine.
Yeah. Now I'm just reminded those. So one thing that I didn't even know that I had, because, you know, sometimes there's all this heaviness. And one thing I realized I didn't even have until my small group leader pointed it out was I was almost, because you know, this is near the point where I'm kind of like, okay, I think, you know, my real father is actually different than my stepfather. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, again, I've seen the photos and stuff. And so what I learned was that actually, so then my father, because he passed away a few months, you know, after I was born, and, you know, after the whole like prayer with my mom.
Yeah.
And so my mom viewed it as almost an exchange, like God gave me an exchange for her husband.
Mm.
And then I remember again, like around the senior year when my mom told me that, I guess I didn't know this, but I only like realized it was my small group leader pointed out that I guess at one point I almost blamed myself. Mm. I was like, man, did God take away my dad because I was born? You know,
sure.
Would my dad still be here even if I wasn't born? And so, yeah, that night, so I can say, okay, it is senior year. So then my small group leader just, you know, he just hugged me and he said, you know, Kyung, it's not your fault. It's not your fault. And he just repeated that.
Man, I think Goodwill Hunting to you.
Yeah, that's right.
But like when he said that, like I never thought about it that way. But when he said it, it just felt a lot of burden lift off. Yeah. And so it's like, huh. I guess deep inside of me, I was trying to like suppress so much of this that I wasn't even willing to, you know, go through my emotions and like see what I'm actually feeling, see what I'm actually thinking. But yeah, my small group leader and my group really helped me to process through all that, all the thought process and stuff.
Did that change your family life at all when you were going through this? Were you able? Do you feel like you're able to share with your mom and your sisters? Or
yeah, I think it took a while. Definitely, even though I went through all, I would say for me, I was able to then eventually forgive my stepfather and find healing in that. It was still very hard to talk about it with my mom or my sisters, and it was also that also caused like almost awkwardness for me to like even say I love you to my mom or my sisters. It's just but I think again it just shows how much of a journey life is, how much of a transformation the Christian life is, because I think I'm just within the last like 3-4 years getting better at that with my relationship with my mom and my sisters. So yeah, it's still a learning process for me, but definitely, you know, God is continuing to transform me into being, you know, more like Jesus, to be a better disciple.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a gift that you shared that with us. Thank you. I mean, because I think, I bet you there's people listening that have similar experiences with their fathers and some real pain there that comes with, you know, maybe not the same story as yours, but certainly, you know, feeling like unforgiveness and how to forgive and all that kind of stuff and what that looks like. So, yeah, I mean, thanks for sharing that, because that is a pretty amazing journey. And what it sounds like a years long journey to go through. So, I mean, if there are people listening that are dealing with unforgiveness, like take heart. Sometimes it takes time. The Lord works through time to do some of that stuff. Yeah. Is your mom and sisters following Jesus? Or are they, what's their lives like right now?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think, thankfully my sisters have always, gone to church. And so, you know, they're good. They're Christian. They're good. Yeah. They're in Washington. Both I have two older sisters. They're both in Washington. My mom's currently in Korea.
Yep.
And I would say my mom's church life has always been rocky, especially again with just how our Christian life started with that prayer, then me, then my father, and then my stepfather. And so there has been a long period where my mom hasn't been going to church, and I just remember back in around like 2018, 2019, when I was thinking about going on missions, I kind of just prayed God. I kind of made two prayers. You know, first I was like, oh, if you really want me to go on mission, you know, someone has to, you know, take care of my mom. Someone has to support my mom. You know, how are you going to do that? You know, kind of like
missionaries don't get the money, right?
Yeah. And then I also prayed along with that, you know, that Lord, you know, please let my mom go back to church, because I knew around that time she wasn't really attending church. And yeah, like soon after, you know, both answers were prayed within the same time frame, I guess, because I went to Korea to visit my mom. And during that time, you know, she found another partner, and then he was helping to support her, and he was actually, you know, he's a Christian, and he was the one that was taking her out to church. So I was like, oh, okay, that's great.
That's like a double whammy right there.
Yeah, there you go.
That's cool.
It's like, I guess you do want me to go on missions, and that's why I went on missions.
Okay, so back.
Well, yeah, let's connect those two dots. Then.
Yeah, what happened after high school?
After high school, where did you go? Did you go to college? What happened there?
Oh yeah, so actually, right after high school, I was burning to go on missions, but then I was like, you know, missions is so hard to get out, or that initial step, because there's so much with raising funds, and it just didn't work out. So I did go straight to college, and then my mom was like, "Be a doctor." So I said, "Okay, I'm gonna be a doctor." And so I went to UW, got a degree in biology, But then I was like, okay, my heart's not in the right place. I don't want to be a doctor.
Did you like UW? Did you have a good experience
there? I really did like UW.
Did you like biology?
I liked biology, but not chemistry.
I really did. Organic chemistry is one of those things that weeds people out. Is that true? I don't know. I've heard this before.
Organic chemistry, you really have to be... Yeah, discipline. I mean, I was disciplined, but, yeah. But it was just really hard for me.
I always hear, like, for engineers, it's like statistics or whatever is one that kind of pulls people out. And then for people who go in pre-med, it's like, organic chemistry. Those are like the, if you make it through this, you might make it through or something. Yeah.
So you graduate. What's your plan? I know you wanted to go into missions. What happens after graduation?
Oh, yeah. So after graduation, I actually briefly tried one more time to go on mission. And I looked into YRAM, but then YRAM required DTS, and DTS was like $6,000. I was like, I can't do this. And so next step was, okay, missions. And it was just like a little thing that I had. Maybe this really isn't the path for me. And so then I'm thinking, okay, now I got to find my career. You know, what do I do with the biology degree? And for a whole year, I was applying to jobs. I didn't get anything. Hmm. And then out of nowhere... I got a job offer, and it was from the CDC. And so when I applied for this particular job, they ask you what region of the US you prefer to live in. And I picked, it was like region 10 or 11, and it's Washington, Oregon, Alaska. And I was like, I want to stay in Washington. Oregon's not bad.
You got a 33% chance. Yeah.
And then when the offer came, it was like, it was for Anchorage, Alaska. It was like, no chance to change
to appeal or anything like that. Man.
It was like, this is the offer, final offer. It's just like, okay, I need a job. I need to work on my career. So I guess I'll go to Alaska to pursue my public health career. And the thing was, the moment I landed in Alaska for my job, right? All of a sudden, it just dawned on me. I was like, wait a second. This is where my dad passed away.
I wondered, I wondered.
So it was really weird that, God kind of brought me back. And one thing the whole thing of just like, life is a journey, continued transformation, in that I realized... During those two, so I was in Alaska for 2 years, and it was just during those 2 years that I realized, even though I forgave my stepfather and I, sorted my emotions with him, I never really thought about my biological father. And I never knew him. I never seen him.
Yeah, totally.
But then I think there was a part of me that could find further peace through thinking through all this. And, I didn't know it, but God knew it. So I think that's why Alaska... He brought me there, went through again another emotion process of like going through all my emotions, thinking about, just my dad. It's still an awkward topic for me. Just
totally.
Like,
that makes total sense.
But it was through there, in Alaska that I was able to then eventually find peace with my biological father, that I had a father. And it was also through there was a church there that I started attending. And then the pastor there really helped me in terms of going off into missions, because he knew, somehow he found out that I was interested in missions.
Hmm. Isn't that cool, though, that like you had thought about missions several times and then that it didn't work out under your own power? And it sounds, just from what I'm hearing, and again, I could be wrong, so you can tell me I'm wrong, but it sounds like God had work to do on you before he said yes to this, before you were allowed to go pursue this. Mm-hmm. That's really cool. It's cool that you found, again, another community up in Anchorage. And from there, they affirmed that desire again. You probably had put it to bed a little bit.
Mm-hmm. What was working at, just be curious before we jump into Rex's conversation there, like what was it like working with the CDC? What years were you there and what did you enjoy it?
Yeah, what do you do with the CDC?
Yeah, exactly.
So I...
You control diseases.
So there's
it's like Ghostbusters.
There's a lot of categories, but they specifically put me in immunization. And I personally thought, when I thought public health, it was more like out on the field work, so interacting more with people. But my specific responsibilities and duties was very office work. Just like staying in the office, cubicle, updating information, making all these documents, data input, and all that. But I just realized. So again, I was there for 2 years, and the year after I quit, then you know the whole COVID hit, and so I was like,
nice.
I got out of there with immunizations like before things got hard.
You nailed that, man.
You made good choices at that point. Amazing.
So you're there for 2 years. You quit. You leave. Do you go straight from there to Korea, or do you come back here? What's it look like?
So yeah, from Anchorage, I came back to Seattle. Mm-hmm. And because now I was already in the process of joining a mission organization, and it was called OMF. Mm-hmm. And man, the OMF application process is actually very long.
Yeah, I can believe that. Yeah.
But somehow I expedited mine. And so I was already in the process of joining them. But then now the hard part was now I have to raise 100% of my funds. And that took about a whole year or so, because I originally thought it would only I was overconfident. I thought it would
optimistic.
Only
optimistic is good.
I thought it would only take like 4 to 6 months, but I extended my deadline like 3 or 4 times. Yeah. And I just got so sad. Like, yeah. God, is this really what you want? Like, if you want me to go, I think you would have gave me the funds by now, right?
Yeah.
But seeing that none of the funds are coming in, I guess you don't want me to go. So then that's why I thought, okay, I went back on track to pursuing my, like, a different career path. But eventually took me to Korea. I went back to Korea. I was like, okay, this is my last trip, and then I'm going to start looking for a job. Because during my year of just trying to raise funds, I mean, I've talked to everyone I knew. And it's like, what more do I talk to? I've even like went on Google, searched like churches in Seattle. And
like, emailed
these churches.
You're cold calling.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh,
man.
I went there and like no response, or like, you know, and it's very hard because a lot of those churches, it makes sense. You know, they want more of a relationship before they support anyone. I mean, so I just went to Korea. I'm like, God, I mean, I've talked to everyone, and I just felt like, okay, Maybe I'm just going to have one, you know, last trip for myself before I start on a career. But then somehow in Korea, while I was in Korea, the rest of the funds came in as I was praying. And then I was like, okay, yeah, let's go.
Yeah.
And so where'd you go? What was your life like with OMF, and how long were you with them for?
So I went to Taiwan for 2 years.
Nice.
And it was a 2 years during when COVID just exploded. Because I remember when I landed there, later in that week, Taiwan closed all of its borders.
Oh man.
And so, like, they weren't accepting anyone.
Welcome to Taiwan. You can't leave.
Yeah, exactly.
So I was very fortunate that I got in just before. And it was like, again, I was like, oh, wow. Think about God's timing. Like, how I, even though, you know, got extended 3 or 4 times, I barely managed to get in. But because they closed their borders so soon, we were able to do ministry without any restrictions for the first year and a half. And then after the year and a half, somehow stuff happened. COVID came in. We had to go on lockdown. But that was nearing my 2-year term. So it wasn't that bad.
Huh. What kind of stuff did you do when you were in Taiwan?
So first 6 months, just straight up language learning, Mandarin. But I was very optimistic that I was going to learn it quick. But I didn't learn much. I mean, I did learn, but it was really hard. But after that, the next year and a half, OMF put me in GI. And I was working with a lot of college students and young adults.
Huh.
And a little bit of high schoolers that would come here and there. And so a lot of my ministry was then, you know, just spending time with college students and young adults. And the part that was so fulfilling was because I think before I went on mission, there's two criteria that I really wanted to hit. And this was even before I decided on going to Taiwan, or God decided I was going to go to Taiwan. The first was like, I really wanted to go reach out to the unreached people groups. And in Taiwan, their working class, this is from OMF, and I think it's from the Joshua Project. What they say, amongst the working class, 99% of people don't know Jesus.
Amazing.
I'm just like, wow, that's a big unreached people group. The second thing I wanted to hit was because I had such a history again, just with my father, you know, and all the emotions, you know, broken family stuff, I really want to reach out to, you know, young students and young adults that are going through similar things.
Cool. Yeah.
And apparently Taiwan had one of the highest divorce rates in Asia.
Wow. Man.
And so, yeah, when I got there, a lot of people I met, they were struggling with the exact same things, you know, I was struggling with, all the emotions I was going through. And so just to love on them and just to kind of share that we have a God who is our Father, who loves us. It was really fulfilling.
That's
for
really
me.
Powerful. Yeah. Yeah.
Did most of the young people speak English there, or Korean that you could speak to them as well?
So the hard part was I learned Mandarin, but the place I was in, because it was kind of in the rural areas, they spoke Taiwanese.
Okay.
I mean, the young adults, they mixed their Taiwanese and Mandarin. And so okay. for me, it was really hard. I did my best.
Oh, man, because you're learning Mandarin if they're mixing the languages up. That's
yeah. I mean, so communication was hard, but somehow, you know, God works in mysterious ways. And so even though language was a barrier, he still worked. Yeah.
That's awesome.
You know, God uses our pain so much. It is amazing.
You kind of have to let him.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he'll find a way, but it, you know, going through that process of forgiveness and is in the letting go kind of does allow your story to
totally
to continue to be used. You're not stuck there. And that's really cool that God put you again back in that place, having dealt with not just your stepfather, but your biological father, and
that's
being
a cool
there
story.
To minister.
Okay, so you finish up at OMF, and then what is God's next leading for your life? Bring us up to date.
Well, I wanted to stay with OMF. I mean, okay, I wanted to stay with OMF, but then OMF told me if you want to stay longer than 3 years,
raise some more money.
That too. It's like you need seminary training, and I was like, seminary. And then I actually was so against, like, I don't want to go to seminary because I'm not going to be a pastor. I don't, you know.
Famous last words.
But when OMF told me, I was like, okay, fine, I'll do seminary. So that's why I started seminary with Western Seminary.
Mm-hmm.
So I started taking part-time classes with them. And so I finished my 2 years with them, and I came back. And as I'm taking my seminary courses, you know, I had to do something. I had to find a job.
Totally.
So then I was okay, what do I do? And this is when, you know, out of nowhere, one of my friends, he kind of just threw it out there. Hey, I met this pastor. It was like the whole thing was like 5 seconds. You know, I just want to send you this. Just if you're interested, contact him. If not, whatever.
That's like, funny.
I wasn't going to contact him. I was like, this is weird. Like, why would I contact like this guy?
Did I reach out to you first? Or
no, I reached, and then so I emailed. Okay. I was like, And then, that guy was Darren.
Wait, what? Yeah. Your friend was such a cool guy. I really liked the time with him, and I just realized at the end that wasn't it. And he's like, this is your job. This is, you should do this. It was cool. Yeah. It's been great to have you here. Okay, so kind of where are you at now? Like, what is God leading? So you're in seminary. You're still at Western Seminary. You're a pastoral intern here for 20 hours a week, you know, which is awesome. And you're doing a great job. Glad to have you on the team. Like, what is God speaking to you kind of around this time? What do you think where you're at?
Yeah, so I think I'm very fortunate first that I get to be in this position as I'm in school. Because a lot of things I'm learning at school, it's so much easier absorb as I'm practicing.
Oh, 100%.
Rather than like, you finish your degree and then you try to remember the last 3 years.
You don't. I remember being in seminary, and this, again, I'm not looking down on anyone because everyone has different things, but I remember being in some seminary classes and being able to just translate that right away. And I had some classmates who were just in school. And I was a little envious of them at first because it was like, man, they're taking way more classes and they're going quickly. But then I was like, wait a minute. I'm like getting to turn around and like almost regurgitate this to people and like use this immediately to preach a sermon or to lead a Bible study or, you know, do counseling, whatever it might be. You're right. It's an amazing thing to be able to just like pivot and, you know, go right back. Even when it's like, Greek or Hebrew. You're like, I guess I can use this. So.
Yes,
that's right. Kyung knows Mandarin and all that stuff. He's, right. he's good at all languages.
The worst ever. Yeah, but yeah, so I'm going from an MDiv, which is 3 years, but I'm doing part time, so it's 6 years. Mm-hmm. I finished 2 years so far, so I have 4 years left. And I just think during this time of my life is just to gain as much experience as I can in local church ministry. And again, God is opening up my heart more in terms of, like, I think before I was like, any kind of pastoral role, no way. Like, yeah. I'm just going to be a missionary, you know? But then, you know, as I'm being able to just practice a lot of things that I learn, being in this position to gain experience for ministry, the past like 2-3 months, God has really been opening up my heart in terms of, you know, just pastoral things. And so I honestly don't know, which is why I'm so thankful for Darren and Tom just kind of helping me in this path, figuring out, you know, just this journey in my life. But I think, again, God knows what he's doing. He introduced me to them like a perfect time in my life. So it's just, we'll see what happens. But I feel like ministry is, you know, 100% the career path that I want to be on. Yeah.
That's awesome.
What's surprised you about pastoral ministry? I mean, you've only been for a couple of months now, but what's like been the biggest surprise, or that you're like, oh, I didn't know?
Probably how much money you make.
That's right.
I would say.
It's all about the Benjamins. Yeah,
because I started out in hospitality, it just opened my eyes to like how much hospitality actually means to the whole church. As in,
yeah.
At first I was just like, man, what hospitality? I'm just gonna say hi to people. But then, like, the more
totally,
yeah. But as weeks passed, it's so much more than that, because, again, you're trying to create a culture of hospitality.
Yeah.
And it involves the whole church, and if you want to create it, you know, you have to be very pastoral minded in terms of, you know, all the people coming in, the people that God is sending to the church. And so for me, I think it really gave me a new view in terms of, you know, how do we see people that God sends to us? You know, how do we invite them to God? How do we invite them to Jesus every Sunday, and just taking care of them? 'Cause it's more than just saying hi. And just like how do you make them feel loved? And I think that's the biggest part, because as a church, I want to, or, you know, we want to reflect the love of Jesus, the love of Christ. And so I think one of the best ways, you know, the moment you see them, you want to do that. And so, yeah.
Yeah,
absolutely. I can't remember. I was going to try to find it real quick, but I can't. It's either in 1 Timothy 3 or Titus 1 or maybe both, where it tells us the elders are supposed to be hospitable, right?
Yeah.
Do you guys remember which one it is?
I don't.
It's one of them. Or
the
both.
The Bible.
It's in the Bible. Somewhere someone has said, kind of like Hebrews. Someone.
Yeah. I know it's in there somewhere.
It's in one of those lists. But dude, like, that's amazing, because we are called as, like, from leaders in the churches to people are just part of the church.
Yeah.
So we consider ourselves, I'm not really a leader here, but we're called to hospitality. I appreciate one of the things you said to us originally, Kyung, is like, how do we make hospitality be part of our DNA of the church?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally.
I felt that was super cool.
Yeah, I think of...
And I've heard that before, but yeah.
I think, well, we'll get there sometime next year, so spoiler alert. But yeah. Hebrews 10, you know, where it says, don't forsake meeting with one another. It doesn't say, but meet with one another. It says, but welcome each other.
Yeah, welcoming one another.
Welcoming as Christ has welcomed you. Mm-hmm. Yep. So I think it's important. And I think, you know, it's one of those things where... sure, it starts with hospitality volunteers, like you're saying, but you are kind of in the hospitality ministry setting the barometer for how welcoming a church is.
Yeah,
And I think that's a really important task. So,
yeah.
What are you passionate about? You know, I mean, that can be like offline stuff, or when you're done an imprint, or you're not reading a book for a seminary class for a change, or whatever. What gets you excited?
Like. So non-church answer?
Either way.
Give us a non-church answer, yeah.
Non-church first, and then we'll end with the church one, yeah.
So I've even though this hobby has been like breaking my body, I really like powerlifting. Like every week I go in, because it's just kind of like testing the limits of, you know, your body, you know, the body that God gave you. And it's just like, you know, every like once, at least once a month, something pops, cracks, and I'm like,
oh my gosh, you're over 30 now, dude. Watch it.
Yeah,
but it's
it just goes downhill.
Oh yeah,
no. I got a lot of years on you.
I guess it has been exciting so far because I've been in my 20s and you know you heal pretty quickly.
Yeah, you do.
Your strength, yeah. You know, but not then so much I guess in your 30s, yeah, not, yeah, I guess I have to watch out.
Yeah, what is it with our weight lifters? Like, the last two people we hired at Imprint Church are weightlifters around here, man. What is it like?
Yeah. I woke up the other morning and I popped something in my back. And I didn't even do work out or anything.
That but you to me. Also lift weights. That's yeah. why, you know?
Yeah.
You
guys are both. I'm 33 now, and the same thing happened to me. I, like, slept wrong,
oh, man.
And my neck hurt all day. And not because, like, when I was a kid, it was like I fell out of a tree. And yeah. That's how I hurt myself. And now it's like I
actually, when I
fell
out of the tree when I was a kid, I was like, oh, I'm ready to go again.
Yeah, same.
Can I have another, sir? You know, like
pretty much
climb right back
just
up.
Bounce everyone on the way down.
Yeah,
when totally. Gets knocked out of you. So, okay, other than hurting yourself, what else are you passionate about?
Oh, man.
About?
So, I mean, this is more a lot from like my middle school, high school, kind of college. I was really into a lot of like anime stuff. Just I loved Sweet. Watching it.
You draw? Are you an artist?
No. I mean, I used to have really severe OCD. So because of that, I'm really good at like tracing stuff
yep.
because I do my best to just follow however yep. something's drawn. But oh no. My mind just blinked.
No, anime stuff. Yeah, you were saying anime. Yeah.
And I even like memorize, you know, hand seals from That's... like the shows and like check it like to my friends. Check this out.
Amazing.
Yeah. But nowadays, as I get older, it's like you have less and less time, so you have to. Like I used to love also just worship. Just listening to worship songs, Christian songs.
Yeah.
Trying to imitate, but going like south.
But you're a guitar player too.
Well, no, I remember like Darren came up to me and said, "Yeah, man. So we hired Kyung, and he has the nicest guitar of all of us."
Yeah, I think that's what you told me, right? Exactly. Like actually, I think Tom Regan has the nicest guitar of all.
I don't
of
know,
us.
Man. It's a calling. So
it is a calling. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
But anyway,
well, dude, if people want to get a hold of you, it's kyu mm-hmm. at imprintchurch.org.
Yes.
So. Kyung Yu, KYU at imprintchurch.org. And yeah, reach out to Kyung. Get to know him a little bit. Say hi to him. Hang out with him.
Mm-hmm.
Man, it would be fun to share life with him a little bit. The other piece that I would say real quick, just one more plug. This is weird. It's turned into an advertisement or something. I feel kind of dirty. But he's actually has a passion for young adults as well.
Like yep,
one of the 100%. Things he came and told us, he asked Tom and I, is like, would you guys mind if like try to get the young adults in the church to get together? We're like, that sounds amazing, you know? And so it's what's cool is you guys just had a pumpkin carving event mm-hmm. and you had several young adults come out. And I would love to invite other young adults, especially anyone who's part of Imprint Church, to be part of the community and start building some relationships mm-hmm. and
yeah.
get to know Kyung a little bit. And he's a good dude by all means. And mm-hmm. then just get to know one another, kind of grow in a relationship together. It'd be cool to see the Lord do something in that group of people. So
100%.
Yeah.
Well, I would be remiss if we didn't acknowledge once again Stephen's meteoric rise to fame.
Thanks for being the most epic host. Yeah,
I would say without any irony that you have been the hostess for the mostest. I would say that.
Well, thank you.
You're so welcome.
We're going to invite you back again.
We are. Yeah, and Kyung too. I mean, look out.
Exactly. Kyung's going to host next week.
Yeah. It won't be me saying all right. It'll be him saying hello. I'm Kyung.
And he'll wave his hands when he says that. So no, Kyung. He's like hello. Hello.
It's fantastic.
That's the Kyung thing.
But no, for real, reach out to Kyung. Welcome him as he is in charge of the people that welcome you to church.
Right.
Get to know him. Get to know him in his passion. Maybe don't go powerlifting with him, but pray for him as he's
break your body.
Pray for him as he's leading all this stuff and reach out and say hello. But we'll be back sooner or later with
something
else.
Yeah, might have a little small break, but we're gonna come back and talk a little bit about church planning.
Got some
soon.
Stuff to talk to you guys about.
Yeah, so. Totally.
Is there any way we could pray for Kyung or have people pray for him?
How can we pray for you?
How do you do it?
Yeah, I mean, I think right now, just a lot, again, seminary work. It's getting really hard because I'm doing Hebrew, and also,
amen, brother. Hebrew's hard.
And just again, as I'm in this position, doing ministry, that God would just help me to do the best I can. I think it's really easy to kind of slowly end up in cruise control mode and just kind of like, whatever. But like really do my best and gain as much as I can from it.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah. Well, join us in praying for Kyung. And we will see you next week. Or see not next week, eventually. Bye.
Sometime.
Bye-bye. Thanks for listening. For more information and resources from Imprint Church, you can download our app or head to imprintchurch.org. And I really hope that hand motions are still a part of this for you, because like, you're a very animated person. It's good. All right, welcome back to Abound in Hope. I am Rex Gorman. We're already off to a great start. You doing all right over there?
Yep.
Okay. Nothing happened. All right, I'm going to start again.
That's great.
Yeah. All right.